report reflects where the church is at this point in time. The majority does not favor change, and yet there is a significant minority that also has a conscience-bound conviction in the other direction.
That's Reverend James Child, Jr., Director of the Task Force for the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, Studies on Sexuality. We're going to be talking about that report issued last week by the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Here in the last hour of Issues Etc., we're broadcasting live from the 2005 Symposia Series here at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's Tuesday, the 18th of January. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest here in the third hour, Pastor Richard Niebank, is a retired pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. He was one of the framers of the 9.5 Theses, an appeal for confessional faithfulness in the ELCA. Pastor Niebank, welcome to Issues Etc. We heard that cut from the Reverend James Child about a significant minority that does not that does want change. Apparently, he says a majority doesn't want change. A significant minority does want changes in the ELCA with regard to human sexuality. How significant is that minority?
I guess it's all in how you define significant. Numerically, I suppose that they are not significant. But in terms of their profile, they're very high profile. They are very, very able to manipulate the public media. And they are very able to make their voices heard in the chambers of decision making. In other words, they're a very effective lobby. An interest lobby, and changes of this kind are usually made by minorities who have a loud voice. These people are good at co-opting. They co-opt the church's language, and they will, if they can, co-opt the church and use it to legitimate what they want. I don't think that's saying something too strongly. In that sense, they are nobody to be trifled with.
Let's talk about the report that was issued at long last week from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America's Task Force on Sexuality. How would you assess the report itself?
Well, to be perfectly frank, I think it's a weasel. On the one hand, it says we recommend no change. That is to say, the existing policy that people in the ordained ministry, for instance, should be celibate in singleness and monogamous heterosexually in marriage should stand. That's what they say on the one hand. On the other hand, they say that it won't be enforced, that quote-unquote pastoral discretion may dictate exceptions. What that amounts to is local option. And when you have local option, then you have no norms at all. And the game is over. Now what this thing appears to do is to counsel putting things on hold. But in effect, it gives away the store.
Hasn't the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America for about the last 5 years, in effect, been putting this subject on hold? This report was due a long, long time ago, and then now that it's finally issued, it seems to say, let's just kind of stay where we're at for now, and we'll see what happens later, it seems.
Well, that's what it's saying, but, you know, appearances are deceptive. The pro-gay lobby is going to make much of the fact that they are disappointed. But quietly, they know that if the church says, on the one hand, there's no change, but on the other hand, there's the possibility of local option, they've won the game because there are no norms anymore. They've been very successful in getting the great body of the membership in one way or another to think that this is an open question. It is not an open question, but more and more people think that this can be decided by a majority vote, when in fact we're dealing with the fundamental doctrines of the church, the ecumenical doctrine, the doctrines of the ecumenical church, not just of the Lutheran church. And to go in the way in which the gay activists are asking us to go is essentially to separate ourselves from the great church Catholic.
There's another audio bite that I would like your reaction to. This is, again, the Reverend James Child Jr. He's director of the Task Force for the ELCA Studies on Sexuality. He says that the church's unity is at least as important as resolving differences over homosexuality. Here he is.
The first recommendation says let's concentrate on ways of living together with our differences for the sake of the mission and ministry of the church.
What do you hear the Reverend Child saying there?
Well, I think he's saying let's agree to disagree. That's basically what he's saying.
Is that an adequate response to the questions of gay marriage and gay ordination?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If the church were to say, for instance, the Ten Commandments say thou shalt not steal, but on the other hand, we'll look the other way when it seems expedient to allow people to steal in order to satisfy their desires. That's all there is to it. The Bible is either the norm for faith and life in the church or it isn't. And our Lord said, do you not read that he that made them in the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave father and mother and cleave to his wife. And the two shall be one flesh. Now, in saying that, this is the norm. It's the norm in enunciated in Genesis 1 and 2, and it's the norm that the Apostolic Church affirmed, Paul does, and it is the icon of the relationship of Christ to the church. To put this up for a vote is simply to destroy our church. It makes the church just a voluntary organization that can decide what it believes and what it does not believe.
Here is the Reverend Christopher Hirschman. He is president of the Evangelical Lutheran Confessing Fellowship, and he says that the church's report on homosexuality is completely unacceptable.
They're going to maintain standards so that they can say, well, at least we have the standards in writing, but we're going to officially declare that we're not going to follow the standards that we have. I mean, what kind of organization does that? I mean, I wouldn't want to belong to a church that, it's duplicity. It's a joke.
All right. Do you agree with him here that this is duplicity?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have taught, the church has taught, the scriptural norm, and we've declared throughout the generations that the Bible is the sole norm for faith and life in the church. If we say that marriage is now up for grabs, it can be generic marriage rather than a marriage between a man and a woman. You know, the thing is, the gay lobby has successfully foisted on the church this notion of sexuality. It's an abstraction. They say, well, sexuality comes in various flavors. The Bible knows nothing of an abstraction called sexuality. The Bible knows of men and women and of marriage and of the purposes of marriage between a man and a woman. And as I said before, in addition to all that, the marriage of a man and a woman is an icon of the relationship of Christ and the church. The gay lobby, so-called, is trying to sell us on a generic notion of sexuality, which then comes in various flavors. And then they talk out of both sides of their mouth, of course, because they say on the one hand, homosexuality is not a choice, but on the other hand, they say it is a choice. It's a lifestyle choice. Because we have lumped into here also the bisexual and the transsexual.
And if they are unwilling to say no to a lesbian couple or a gay couple who come for the blessing of the church, can they really have any basis for saying no to the transgendered couple or to the bisexual couple or to the couple who has an open cuddle, kind of polyamorous arrangement that they would like to have blessed as well?
No, of course not. Of course not. They don't... they're not saying, the gay lobby and the ELCA is not saying this now because it would destroy their case in the sense that it would be better. There are some people who are saying, well, now we'll go a little farther. We'll give you this, but we won't give you that. Well, so they're not going to come out and say, well, we want all of this. They just talk about committed relationships. The Bible knows nothing about committed relationships and sexuality. The Bible knows about marriage. And marriage is based upon fidelity, but it's between a man and a woman.
We're talking with Pastor Richard Niebank. He's a retired pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. He was one of the framers of the 9.5 Theses. It's an appeal for confessional faithfulness within the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the largest Lutheran church body in the United States. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And we're talking about this report on sexuality issued last week by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Can you explain to me, I was looking over the report, and what I found interesting was that the report seemed more concerned that the church not sanction any ceremonies for same-sex unions. They didn't have a problem, it seemed, in principle, with having same-sex unions, but the church shouldn't sanction any ceremonies by which those unions... We'll just leave that up to individual people. Can you explain to me what seems to be a kind of missing the point here? I'd be more concerned about having the unions themselves than the ceremonies.
They're going to advocate ceremonies down the road. You can count on it. They're not doing it now because they see that there's a good bit of opposition to it, but that's part of the agenda, and it will come if the church adopts this speaking out of both sides of its mouth on the norm. That there will be, and there have been, of course, there have been, and they've been sanctioned by bishops in the ELCA. There have been ceremonies for homosexual couples, both lesbians and male homosexuals. There have been. And it's not just that the local pastor did it, but the bishop affirmed what he did.
There was the very prominent case in the news, and this in the Twin Cities, of a openly lesbian, an actively lesbian woman who was ordained as a pastor. Her name, Anita Hill.
Yes.
The congregation, I think, was sanctioned at one point. Then at some time later, the sanctions were lifted or the status changed in some way. There was another case, and the names elude me, in Burbank, California, I think, as
yes.
well.
Yes.
Can we expect these kind of cases to now become the norm where in practice things are allowed that on paper are at least technically forbidden within the ELCA?
I'm afraid that's the way it's going, and it's because too many people are counseling peace at any price. This is a church dividing issue. We have to say this. See, the report tries to say that it's not a church dividing issue. It is a church dividing issue because it denies the normative role that Scripture is supposed to play. I mean, the Scripture alone is the constitutive norm of the Lutheran Church, and what Scripture teaches has been the norm of the Church Catholic from the get-go. And we see what's happening in, for instance, the Episcopal Church, where the great body of the Anglican Communion in Africa and the Southern Cone are, in effect, to one degree or another, excommunicating the Church in the United States and Great Britain.
On that subject, the Anglican Communion did meet, and the prelates of the Anglican Communion did say at some point here, the Windsor Report said to the Episcopal Church USA, cease and desist,
mm-hmm.
and maybe an apology might be in order here. Well, the Episcopal Church USA just issued that apology at the end of last week, and the apology was very carefully worded to say, we're sorry that we caused you concern.
Yes.
There was no apology for the ordination of an openly gay bishop.
No, they didn't say that they were sorry for violating the norm, the constitutive norms of the Church. They said, we're sorry. We're sorry that you're offended. It's that kind of backhanded, I'm sorry you feel so badly about this.
I was listening to an address, and I talked about this last week when we addressed this sexuality report on the program last week, but I was listening to an address from the presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Yes.
And he made this sometime back, maybe a year ago, where he talked about what will the presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, what kind of a report will he give 15 years from now? And he, at the very end of his remarks, came to the issue of human sexuality. And in essence, I paraphrase, of course, said, we will look back on the controversy over human sexuality in 15 years, and we will wonder why we were so upset and why we thought it was going to divide the church, and we'll wonder why we made such a big deal out of it. After all, does he reflect the mindset that in the future we will realize that this isn't such a big deal? Does he reflect the mindset of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America?
I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm sure that he reflects the mindset of the ruling elite of the ELCA, the ruling elite in Higgins Road in Chicago, and throughout the synods, with the exception of one or two, is going along with this. I mean, there's no denying it.
What about the people in the pew, who those who are the parishioners Sunday to Sunday? Number one, are they aware of what's going on, really going on in their church? Are they buying the line that no major changes will be made on human sexuality and practice in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America? And is there a chasm between them, their views, their beliefs, and those of the hierarchy of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America?
I guess there are some who are adamantly opposed to this trend. And they're voting in various ways, voting with their money. Local congregations are withholding their contributions to the larger church. They're it's not that they're not doing mission beyond the congregation, but they are redirecting their benevolence. The congregation to which I belong is one of them. And I rather think that the number is significant. On the other hand, I think there is. It's fair to say that there is a large body of people who are good church people who are just confused and sad and don't know what to think. Now, how you weight these, I'm not in the position to say. I don't think anybody quite knows. But believe me, the leadership has been talking to itself. And I don't know when they're going to wake up, if they're going to wake up.
Do you think the leadership, having seen what happened over the last 3 years with the Episcopal Church USA, do you think they are saying to themselves, okay, we had intended to get there faster, but we will still get there, but we will simply have to slow down lest we suffer the kind of split that the Episcopal Church USA has?
Yeah, I think that's what they're hoping. They're hoping that this will pass, or at least that it will not be on the front burner. They want to put it on the back burner, and they want to get it out of the headlines. I think that's what they're hoping against hope will happen, and I think that's the reason the report is phrased in the fashion that it is. But
with only 1 minute before we have to go, my church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is beginning renewed talks with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Should those engaged in those talks have any illusions about the direction that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is headed on the issues of human sexuality and homosexuality? With only 1 minute.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod should talk turkey to the ELCA. They should talk turkey to the ELCA, saying, you're risking schism, you're risking ruling yourself out of fellowship with us and with the larger church.
When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking a little bit more with Pastor Richard Niebank on this report on sexuality issued last week by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. We're going to take a break here. If you'd like to join us in this conversation, this break is a great time to call. We're coming to you live from the 2005 Symposia Series here at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, here on Tuesday, January the 18th, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be talking with him more on this sexuality report issued by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Pastor Richard Niebank is a retired pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and he was one of the framers of the 9.5 Theses. It was an appeal some time back for confessional faithfulness in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I've said it before on the air, and I know you've heard me say it. I've said it before on the air when the Episcopal Church was going through this, when they were headed this direction, when they finally took the step to ordain and consecrate as Bishop Gene Robinson. I said, we're all headed this direction. Whether we want to or not, we are headed this direction. As long as we continue to capitulate to the mindset of the culture on these issues, and as long as we continue to abandon God's Word and instruct ourselves and have His authority something other than what God's Word clearly says, as uncomfortable as it may make us in this modern and postmodern era, we are all headed that direction, and God help us if we are. You know, schism and the breaking apart of denominations will be the least of our troubles. We'll be right back after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Matthew's Gospel contains a lot of Jesus teaching. But how do these long sections of teaching from our Lord relate to the end of Matthew's Gospel, where Matthew tells us about Jesus' suffering, death, and resurrection for a sinful world? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for January is called Discourses in Matthew by Dr. David Scare. Discourses in Matthew is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look under the What's New section for more information on the Issues, Etc. book of the month for January, Discourses in Matthew, Jesus Teaches the Church by Dr. David Scare. Or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues, Etc. book of the month for January, Discourses in Matthew, Jesus Teaches the Church.
Historical science. Now what is it? Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry is building a major creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, Ken, that sounds a little strange. What do you mean by that term, historical science?
The reason many people are confused about creation and evolution and the supposed billions of years for the age of the Earth is because they don't understand the difference between what's called historical science and observational science. Let me explain to you. When NASA scientists sent a rover to Mars last year, this great technological achievement was a result of observational science. Scientists used their five senses with repeatable testing, and they built this great marvel of technology. But when these same scientists stated that the rocks that the rover's camera were photographing were millions of years old, they just stepped outside of observational science, and now they're using historical science. You see, they couldn't prove the millions of years. This was their belief about the past, and is based on lots of fallible assumptions. Creation scientists can show that there's nothing in observational science that contradicts the account of origins recorded in Genesis. The next time someone talks about molecules to man evolution or millions of years, remember, they're dealing with historical science or beliefs about the past, not things that can be observed, repeated, or proved.
Evolution is a false history of the universe, and the Bible presents the true record. Find out more when you read Ken Ham's free booklet, The Seven Seas of History. It's available, along with many other booklets, at AnswersRadio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. How would you define the word family? According to the Bible, your family consists of those to whom you are related by blood, marriage, or adoption. Part of the breakdown of the American family today consists in redefining the term. In sitcoms, popular songs, and movies, the word family is often used to refer to any group of people living together. Don't let your children be misled by this. As Christian parents, remind your children that Jesus loved them enough to die on the cross for them, and He has also given them a real family who loves and nurtures them. Your family is a blessing to be appreciated and treasured. It is not a theoretical term to be redefined by the media. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute. Please visit our website at cmli.org.
AM 850 KFUO wants you to have a very special Valentine's Day. When you hear us blow you a kiss, that's your cue to call and register for one of three Build-A-Bear Workshop Valentine teddy bears we're drawing for on Wednesday, February 9th. You can see these cute, cuddly bears at KFUO.org. We'll also award three I Love You bouquets from Cruzy Grim Florist. Listen for the kiss and call. One registration per household, please, for a very special Valentine's Day on AM 850 KFUO.
People are up. Because of the drift of the ELCA away from the Bible. That's the problem here, and they can't get that, and they come out with a report like this was a horrible waste of millions of dollars.
Reverend Christopher Hirschman, he's president of the Evangelical Lutheran Confessing Fellowship, and he's talking about the ELCA losing members and dollars over things just like the report that was issued last week by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America on human sexuality, purporting to offer no urging for changes in the church, but in fact really calling for, in its own subtle way, the very changes it says will not be occurring. We're talking with Pastor Niehaus about this, and he is one of the authors of A Call for Faithfulness in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America that was made back in 1995 or 1996, called the 9.5 Theses. He's a retired pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Pastor Richard Niebank is our guest. Pastor Niebank, to what degree has the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America become such a bureaucracy that the theologians of the church, faithful pastors who are speaking out, seminary professors, who are willing to voice their concerns about this, simply not being listened to? Now we're listening to bureaucrats rather than theologians in the church.
Well, I think that's a very good diagnosis. The what prevails is what one might call a corporate model, and the CEO and the bureaucracy at the top controls the organization. In a sense, one could say that the ELCA has experienced, or that this segment of Lutheranism, which now is the ELCA, has experienced a hostile takeover by people who have interests, and they're lobbying to have them legitimated. And this gay thing is just one of them. Multiculturalism is another one. You can name any number. And then the bureaucracy has a life of its own. It has a life of its own, and it grows and it grows and it grows. Our overseas missionaries are fewer and fewer, and the bureaucracy of world missions grows and grows.
Have you personally talked with the presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, Pastor Mark Hansen?
I have not. I have talked with his predecessor. Actually, I exchanged a number of letters with his predecessor, H. George Anderson, whom I knew personally when we were both at Philadelphia Seminary. He was a good friend. And I registered my concern, and I got nowhere. I got nowhere, and I finally issued an open letter to the bishops and people of the ELCA concerning this whole matter. I pointed out that this matter is being settled by interest politics, that there is no real debate of the theological issues, that it's all special pleading and emotionalism. It's like Queen for a Day, to use an expression. And I said basically that it has to stop. But I got nowhere with Bishop Anderson, and I haven't even tried to get anywhere with Bishop Hansen. I think it would be totally futile.
Let's talk with Herman, who calls from Illinois, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Herman.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask the pastor, Newbanks, would he agree with an appraisal that one element that's brought this on has been the decline of biblical confessionalism in the ELCA seminaries, among other reasons, the influence of higher criticism, rationalism, Darwinian evolutionistic theory, all sorts of things from Bultmann and Tillich and the Jesus seminars and radical feminism have all more or less eaten away at a biblical heritage here.
Herman, it's a great question, and thank you very much for the call.
Well, you're quite right. You're quite right. The zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, has captured most, if not all, of our seminaries. So much so that political correctness reigns, and seminarians who want to be biblically faithful and confessionally faithful fear that they will be punished if they don't conform to the prevailing norms of political correctness. That is as true as it can be. The horror stories that I have heard are many, and I'm sure there are many, many more.
I'm wondering about that issue of the seminaries. Is it possible, and I'm speaking here from complete naivete, because I really don't know, is it possible for a professed, open, and practicing homosexual, male or female, to be accepted and make it through a course of seminary study in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America?
Of course, yeah. Oh yes.
So should
yes.
It, so how should it surprise anyone when that candidate says, "Now I need to be ordained. I've finished the seminary, and it was no problem while I was taking my seminary courses, openly gay and practicing. Why won't you ordain me?"
Well, that's right. And I was on a candidacy committee, and what I was finding was that many, many candidates for the ministry, people who wanted to enter seminary or people who were in seminary, were more committed to their political and cultural views than they were to the gospel. And when you called them on it, they got furious, and they essentially said, "You owe me a call." And this is the attitude that we're dealing with.
What do you think, realistically? You were at the near the end of a long service in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, being a retired pastor. What do you think the future for the pastor who desires to be faithful and who is now graduating from a seminary in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, when they have reached your seniority in the ministry, what will their church look like if they can stay that long?
Well, I almost despair, and I'm trying not to to give in to that feeling. I would not want to be going into the ministry at this time. I would not recommend to a child of mine to go into the Lutheran ministry at this time. I could think of some other churches that he or she might consider, but not the ELCA. Not the ELCA. You have to be strong. I mean, it is someone in that atmosphere has to be ready for martyrdom, if I may use that term, because that's what happens. If you don't use the kind of style that, you know, they have these manuals of style, and they are ideologically driven. If you use male pronouns for God in writing seminary papers, you will fail. You will be marked down. And that's the kind of police state that operates. And I'm not exaggerating.
I'm wondering, without going too far afield into a different but I think a related subject, I have observed, and I don't know if you would agree with me or not, but I have observed that the arguments, the theological arguments, I put that in quotes, that were made, well, probably in the 60s and 70s, for the ordination of women to the pastoral ministry, they're getting rehashed now for the ordination of gays into the pastoral ministry. And irrespective of your position on women's ordination, do you think that that was perhaps the first break in the dike, compromising on what I would consider to be a compromise, quite honestly, on that position?
Well, I think it I think it is clear that that decision was made without proper theological forethought. I think the church at that time decided that this is what they wanted to do, and then they made up a rationale to justify it. And their chickens are coming home to roost. Now, I happen to know some female pastors who are faithful to the Lutheran confessions. But the fact of the matter is that too many coming into the ministry after that decision were made were seeking to prove a point or to work out some kind of personal problem. And We've had congregations that have simply been brutalized by people who were troubled and whose commitment was to themselves and to their fulfillment, their personal fulfillment, rather than to the proclamation of the gospel and the faithful administration of the sacraments. That is no lie, and that doesn't gainsay the fact that there have been, there are, to my knowledge, to my personal knowledge, some fine, faithful women who are committed and who are doing a good ministry. But in the overall, the decision was taken hastily and without the necessary theological discussion that one would think should go into such a decision. It certainly had ecumenical implications.
And finally on that, so if someone had known then what they know now about the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, do you think it would have given the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America a bit more pause on that issue?
Well, I think so. I think so. But we all know what that time was like. And we all know what was going on in all the churches at that time, including the LCMS. Even though you didn't capitulate on that issue, nevertheless, there was a lot of pressure. And
there's been capitulation. There has been capitulation. Thank you very much for being our guest, Pastor Niebank. I appreciate your time, especially on short notice on this subject.
My pleasure.
Pastor Richard Niebank is a retired pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and he's one of the framers of the 9.5 Theses, an appeal for confessional faithfulness in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. We've been talking about that sexuality report issued last week by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January is written by one of the faculty members here at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's also one of the speakers here at the 2005 Symposia Series, and he might even be one of our guests in the next couple of days. I do not know for sure. The book is called Discourses in Matthew, Jesus Teaches the Church by Dr. David Scare. The book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling, and you can find out more about Discourses in Matthew, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Right there on the front page of our newly revamped webpage, you will find information on this book and a way to order as well. You can also call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, Discourses in Matthew, Jesus Teaches the Church. If you weren't able to attend this symposia series, you simply weren't able to, and you're saying, I'm sorry I missed out on that, and I'd like to hear and get a taste of what this was like. You can get more than a taste in our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, Discourses in Matthew. Dr. David Scare was speaking earlier today about who is Jesus according to the Gospel of Matthew. That's just a little bit of what you'll get in our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. When you call or write, mention that you listen to Issues, Etc. Now, speaking of listening to Issues, Etc., for the last 10 minutes of the program today, we're going to be talking with, I don't want to call fans, but faithful listeners to this program from far and afield. We're going to be talking with Tom Bartsch from Phoenix, Arizona, and also someone of my acquaintance for the past 5 years, Stan Slonkowski. I always get your name because you have two difficult... If you were Tom Slonkowski, it wouldn't be so bad, but you're Stan Slonkowski, that all kinds of runs together, from Pasadena, California. And they're both avid listeners to Issues, Etc. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you. Stan, welcome.
Thank you.
And Tom, welcome to you. Thank you for joining us at short notice here. First of all, we'll begin with you, Tom. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a lay person. I was originally born and raised in Staten Island, New York, and into a LCMS congregation of which my family was probably the church family. There was somebody on every board in the church, and met my wife there. She went to Concordia Bronxville and is a called Lutheran teacher. And we married 17 years ago, and it is her birthday today. Hi, Dana.
Well, and happy birthday to her.
And about 6 years ago, I was taking a position out in Phoenix. I worked for a printing company and took an internal transfer, and she took a call to a congregation out in Phoenix, Arizona, and is teaching there currently in the third grade.
All right, Stan, tell us a little bit about yourself. In fact, folks, I should say behind the scenes here that Stan has been of some use to us here in the last couple hours as we've been preparing for our live broadcast here from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Stan seems to be rather adept at handling our computers here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Stan.
Hey, I was born in St. Petersburg, Florida, because my parents decided to live there for a few years before moving back to Sydney, Ohio, which is maybe a two-hour drive from where we're located right now. And we were members of an ALC church in Sydney, and then we moved to Phoenix for a while, and I went through confirmation and was confirmed at an ALC church in Phoenix, which, of course, is now ELCA. And then I made the mistake of listening too much to Herbert W. Armstrong, or actually it was Garner Ted Armstrong at that time, the World Tomorrow program, which was from a cult called the Worldwide Church of God, which has since become sort of an evangelical type Christian denomination. And so I eventually joined that church, and I went to their Ambassador College, which was located in Pasadena, California, and got an education in bad theology. And eventually, the Worldwide, after Herbert Armstrong died in 1986, they started restudying their theology, and eventually accepted, you know, basic Christian doctrines, including the Trinity, around 1993 or so. But in the course of re-examining my own beliefs, I had to look at a lot of things, and eventually I concluded that I looked at Arminianism and I looked at Calvinism. I didn't really consider Eastern Orthodoxy or Roman Catholicism seriously, but I finally came to the conclusion that the Lutheran confessions were true after all. And I was in it was a Memorial Day weekend, I believe. I was in 1998 in Ely, Nevada, and I turned on the radio and I heard Issues, Etc. It wasn't live, it was a tape delayed broadcast, and that was back when Don Matzett was still doing the program. I said, this is really a fascinating program. I got to see if I can find it on the air in Los Angeles.
Do you remember what the subject was they were talking about, by any chance? Or is that
I can't remember exactly. I think there was maybe a magician or something on that. I don't know why he was being interviewed now, because it's so long ago.
Okay, sorry for the interruption. Go ahead.
That's fine. I also heard the White Horse Inn, and at least that program I was able to hear in L.A. And especially, I thought that Rod Rosenblatt was, which is of course is one of your regular guests on the program here. He was very interesting, and I eventually decided I needed to go to an LCMS church, and I thought, well, I'll take Pastor Swirler's recommendation and go to the closest one to where I live. So I went to one about a mile away, and when I met the pastor there, Jeffrey Horn, who's now taken a call away from there, and he's a pastor at Zion Evangelical Lutheran Church in Garrett, which is about 20 minutes drive north of here. I'm actually staying with him and his family. I found they were listeners to the White Horse Inn, and he was a good friend of Rod Rosenblatt, so I was pretty sure I'd found the right church.
Well, it's very interesting to hear that. Tom, tell us a little bit about how you came into contact with Issues, etc.
Well, it's like, what does a sports talk junkie do when they get interested in theology? You poke around on the web. You find everything having to do with the LCMS, and gradually you come across the KFUO website. Once you've come across that, well, of course you hit Issues, etc. And I was disadvantaged in that I was unable to listen during regular broadcast times because I work at night. But thankfully, you had delayed broadcasts available on the website, on where I could just sit there and listen to it at the computer. But it still forced you to sit there and listen to it. About, I guess it was maybe a year and a half ago, you started having MP3 files that you could download and carry with you and save to disk and
so now you can take us with you? Is that the...
I have you guys loaded on my iPod, at which I'm able to play when I'm at the gym, when I'm in the car, through the FM radio on the car. You go just about everywhere.
So what is it that appeals to you the most about Issues, etc.?
I guess the way I look at it, where I am in Arizona, that kind of has a blue state feel in terms of Lutheran theology, and it's very hard to find good, solid expressions of confessional Lutheran theology in addressing the issues of the day. We see so much things like the purpose-driven life, and it's like, well, how do you answer that? And shows like a show like Issues, etc., well, you have people on doing a talk panel about that. And that's been very valuable to me. I love your sermon tool. My wife has adopted the sermon tool.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yes, and because, you know, I was saying to her, you know, there's something not always right about the sermon. I don't know what it is. And then you came up with that, and then when I explained it to her, it was great.
Stan, before we let both of you go here with only about a minute, if you were to put it in a nutshell, I know there are a lot of things we've talked about before that you do appreciate about issues, et cetera. If you could boil it down to one thing, what do you think it is?
I don't know. That's kind of difficult because there's so many things, but maybe apologetics is something. Maybe if I had known more about apologetics, I would never have joined the cult. And I think that's very valuable, and it's something that, as Rod says, that the Missouri Synod often neglects, and we should do more of it.
Now, I'm asking this question out of real curiosity, not as a softball to get some sort of a plug for issues, et cetera. But because I am limited, and I listen to radio, but I don't listen to a lot of Christian radio of necessity just because of time, is it genuinely unique what you hear on issues, et cetera, as you spin across the dial? First you, Tom, and then very quickly to Stan as well. Is it genuinely unique?
Absolutely. There's nothing like it that I have come across anywhere. I mean, Stan talked a little bit about White Horse Inn that mm-hmm. has some of the same flavor, but to be there consistently, day, you know, 4 days a week, 3 hours a day, and then, you know, 1 to 2 hours on Sunday night, yeah. If you need a way to understand something better and to hopefully indoctrinate yourself with that so that you can explain it to others, that's the key of issues, except.
Is it genuinely unique, Stan, with only 30 seconds?
Yes. Yes, it is. I don't know that I can really add to anything that Tom said, but it is definitely a unique program.
Well, thank you very much both, first of all, for listening to Issues, etc. That's the biggest thing as far as I'm concerned, but also thank you both for joining us here in the last few minutes of this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Tom Bartsch. He is a resident of Phoenix, Arizona, and Stan Slonkowski, Pasadena, California. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking with Dr. Art Just about the office of the deaconess. The deaconess, those ladies that you often see walking around, sometimes in Lutheran churches, wearing their blue coats and different colored crosses on their shoulder. What are they? Are they pastors? No. Well, we're going to talk about the deaconess and its scriptural roots tomorrow on the program. Well, you know, if I can get the answer that it's unique, then about 50% of our job is done. Because, for heaven's sakes, we don't want to sound like everything else that's going on Christian radio, not only because it wouldn't be very interesting, but also because, to be quite honest with you, that's why Issues Etc. exist. To kind of raise the level of the conversation and to bring it back to its Christ center and its cross focus. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.